Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Dragon Rider by Timothy Ellis, narrated by Kevin T. Collins. 1. Attention to orders! Jane bellowed it out with her usual gusto, and the room came to attention. It had been a busy fortnight since I'd finished bringing back the populations of the 14 genocide planets that we knew about. Leanne and I were still looking for more of them, as I was pretty sure there were more. But we still didn't have enough of the Kira Empire under observation. With a dozen new planets with fighter pilots no longer required at home, their recruitment had resulted in the building of another 6 Intrepid-class carriers, and with their systems all linked up into a string from Dragon's Nest to Wonderland, with the hub at Dragon Base, some much-needed changes were about to happen. So I stood behind Imperator John Hunter, along with the other 4 and 3-star officers in the Imperium military, and proudly watched as the members of my original squadron, Navy Mage 1, lined up in front of him. The 3 stars had just been added to, as Annabelle Smith had been promoted to Major General already this morning, in preparation for what was happening now. She couldn't keep the pride and grin off her face. About 20 months ago, my squadron mates had first met as midshipmen, and our expectations had been it would take us years to rise to the rank of commander and be able to take command of a Chaos-class dreadnought, which was what we all dreamed of back then. But 20 months is a long time when you're in your 3rd major war, and with most of us only just 20 standard years old now, we were all admirals. That should have been unusual, but in the Imperium, it wasn't. I'd been a 4-star admiral with my own militia for a long time now, and had only recently passed that responsibility over to Serena, my once girlfriend and master seer, and now a rear admiral. For a seer, she hadn't seen that coming, which still amused me at times. I still had my 4 stars as the Imperium Grand Mage, mainly because it wouldn't be long before dragons with magic would start forming a fleet, and then I'd be the Admiral Mage in charge of them. The rest of the squadron were either rear admirals or fleet admirals, but all of them had been carrying more responsibility than they were being recognized for, even though their last promotion was not all that long ago, and only one of them was flying a Chaos class, which had otherwise been retired from service. John's fleet was flying Maniacs. My people were still flying their Justice, Super Dreadnoughts and Behemoths, respectively, instead of Light Dreadnoughts. We'd pushed the envelope pretty hard, both with ship development and pushing people into where they were needed. We'd had to. The Rottenuga War, which had forged us, had occurred during the Trixone War, and now both had been replaced with the Kira War. The Imperium was growing and had recently had its first major internal political trial, but more importantly, the space we protected was growing faster. And that's why we were in Haven's ballroom today, with every single naval officer present, from the rawest of midshipmen up to me, plus guests, which included close family members of those being honored today, only without them knowing why it was happening. John loved dropping promotions on people without them seeing it coming, and even though I'd known it was happening for a few days now, I'd managed to not let it slip. Now, finally, I was allowed to grin at them as they formed up and braced. "Navy Mage Squadron 1," he said, with his voice carrying all around the vast room at the same volume for everyone. Screens in places showed a close-up of the group face-on, as well as alongside it the rostrum on which we all stood, with John at the podium. "Fleet Admirals Carter, Wolfenstein, Guildford, Songton, Melandrus, Glorfina, Dormation, Matunga, Davis, and Mole, you are all promoted to Rear Admiral. Your home militias and navies have also signed off on the promotions. Congratulations." They'd all been wondering what was going on with being called, so the promotion hit them all as a massive surprise. Serena had been promoted a couple of weeks earlier, and Haynes and Gitt had been promoted when they formed their own militias at the time they became heads of state. Those three were on the far end of the line, and now wondering why they'd been called. John accepted the salutes of the newly promoted as people clapped and cheered, and stepped down and shook hands with each of them. They shifted into the new insignia on their hunter militia uniforms, which few of them still wore normally. But they'd been told to wear it for the gathering, and I actually was as well, and feeling quite uncomfortable in it too, but was trying not to show it. The home Navy promotion was most important for Edna and Judy, as their home ranks had not kept up with their hunter militia promotions. John and I had both gone to bat for them, as John called it, and convinced the American Navy to ratify their true ranks. Previously, they'd been simply listed as seconded to the Imperium at the rank when they first joined, which was very junior. In Judy's case, she was still listed at the rank she'd been busted down to in the court-martial. John returned to the podium and looked out over the crowd. "Others were also considered for promotions, but after discussion, it was decided not to." "For which we are truly grateful," called out George Murdoch, causing most of the room to laugh. John looked at him with an annoyed expression for a few moments, and then laughed himself. Having been in on the discussions, I knew that most of the fleet admirals had been approached about the possibility of being promoted, and they'd all refused. They all liked leading squadrons of super dreadnoughts around too much to want the extra duties of a rear admiral. Traditionally, a full 2-star rear admiral commanded a base, not a fleet. And we did have some who did, but they had enough to do now without increasing their responsibilities. And we had the responsibilities to assign now, hence the need to promote people. John's policy was now to try and keep good people doing great work as happy as possible. I knew his few failures which had convinced him about this still caused him some problems. He looked back at the squadron again. They hadn't been consulted at all, partly at my suggestion. We'd gone to bat for them as well, making what was about to come happen. "You can all shift back into your normal uniforms now." They did so, and I did as well. Mine was now unique, being all white with gold insignia. It left only 5 of them in hunter blue. "Rear Admiral Carter remains in command of the Imperium's hospital ship fleet, with expanded duties which include running the now formalized Imperium Rescue Service, which she'll do under the supervision of Major General Smith." Jill's duties were not really going to change much, since she was normally in attendance at official rescues and most of the larger battles on planets. But it was a sign of recognition of the good work she'd been doing up until now, and she'd now be learning to run those rescues instead of just the hospital side of it. I saw her lock eyes with Annabelle Smith for a moment in surprise and get a nod, and I couldn't stop myself from smiling. Rear Admiral Matunga has been commanding the offensive arm of the Big Cat Navy. This is now formalized into the Cat Cluster Militia, with Admiral Matunga as its commanding officer. All other forces in the cluster are relegated to local duties with no responsibilities outside of their respective systems. That meant that each cat species was retaining their old forces locally and had finally admitted that none of their ships were capable of doing any more than local defense and police work. It had taken the Terrans, losing 17 frontline carriers recently, to convince the cats that older ships were a liability now. And since Matunga had the only real experience commanding Imperium-level ships, they'd finally given him the command he'd actually been carrying for a while now. Rear Admirals Guildford, Songton, and Melandrus are likewise appointed to command their militias as well, after helping to build them. The Luffafluffs have also finally formalized their militia too, and appointed Rear Admiral Wolfenstein to command it. All of these commands report directly to Vice Admiral Bentley, and not to any local officer, even if they technically outrank them. And all these promotions reflect that these officers have been carrying the responsibilities without the ranks for some time now. He was interrupted by a lot of applause. Rear Admiral Glorfina is appointed to command the newly formed Dragon Militia. This includes both Navy and Army units, in the same way the Cat and Luffafluff militias also do. Matunga suddenly looked worried, as it obviously hadn't occurred to him that now his command went beyond just his fleet. Wolf took a moment longer to process that, and he couldn't hide his grin. Both of them were going to need to deal with brigadier generals now, as well as fleet admirals. They will also be supervised by Major General Smith, as well as Vice Admiral Bentley. It wasn't a perfect arrangement, but those three Imperium members wanted their Navy and Army units under a single command. None of the rest had any Imperium-level Army units, since we'd recruited from them individually. The Luffafluffs, on the other hand, had simply seconded entire existing units before building more and seconding them as well. And the Cats operated their army units independently of the Imperium. The Dragons were doing both. Rear Admiral Davis has been appointed to command the newly formed Spine Militia. In recent times, the Apricot Mapping Service has discovered a number of inhabited planets adjacent to the Spine members while looking for uninhabited ones for new colonies, and it was decided by the Spine members to form a joint militia which will oversee the Imperium systems along the Spine between members, the new worlds discovered, and requiring protection as they get added to the jump point network, and any further systems found as exploration continues. It wasn't a big job, as yet, but the AMS was opening up a lot of adjacent space now, and it would grow steadily. All the Spine members and sectors wanted more planets to colonize, and John Slice and his people were flat out trying to find them for them. Some of the newly discovered civilizations, none of them human, wanted to trade. And with the expectation of more like that, Judy's job would steadily get bigger. And that was part of another aspect we now had to address. This, in part, has brought up something which hasn't until now been addressed, which is the increasing number of systems which are now within our space, but who haven't joined either the Imperium or its local cluster. And yet, we are responsible for their protection, given how they came to be in our space. The room was silent now. To this end, we're establishing a series of protectorates. The Kellowan and Karn protectorates are now formalized, with Mage King Rear Admiral Haynes and Matriarch Rear Admiral Gitt taking formal responsibility for them. The Cat protectorate will be covered by the Cat Militia. Matunga startled again. His responsibilities had just expanded a lot. From just being concerned with offensive operations, now he had to deal with defensive and piracy ones as well. With Rear Admiral Serena becoming the head of the Thorns Cluster Militia, her overall job of policing all the single-system members and the non-aligned planets was growing too large. Hence, her previous responsibility is now being divided up into the series of protectorates. Rear Admiral Wolfenstein will also be responsible for the new Luffafluff Protectorate, which will be covering some of the space she was responsible for. That wiped the smirk off his face. He now had piracy to worry about as well. Rear Admiral Dormation will take on the responsibility for the growing Dragon Protectorate, as well as the 266 Protectorate, being all the space opened up by 266 Squadron, where some of our recent members come from. Those two would be separated at some point, but for now the Dragon Protectorate was still small, and Dorm was more than capable of handling both. Rear Admiral Davis will also take on the Galactica Protectorate, which is all the space opened up by the Galactica Exploration Fleet, from which we also have a few recent members. That's part of her responsibility, as we expect the lower end of the Orion arm to be joined up with the Spine in the near future. Galactica was heading up the arm now. It was only a matter of time before they reached where the Darkness Cluster had been removed from and ran out of jump points. That left Edna. She was wondering what was left for her to do after everyone else had divided up known space between them, and I saw the beginnings of her thinking she was being left with the deployment role she'd been doing for so long. Fortunately, I wasn't the only one who'd recognized her slowly growing unhappiness with her lack of challenges, and we did have a real challenge for her. Rear Admiral Mole is joining Marshal James Carrier Command. I saw her eyes go wide. With the new carriers joining that fleet, the need for a rear admiral with fighter experience has opened up, and she was recommended for the job by a number of her peers. Which basically meant, as George had said, they were happy flying maniacs, and were more than happy to promote someone who really wanted such a job and was capable of doing it well. Edna's face showed some shifting emotion before she got a grip on it, but she was obviously elated. John stopped for a breath, and people started applauding. He waited for it to finish. The second-tier fleet assets, basically our obsolete ships, Rear Admiral Serena was in command of, are being reassigned to each of the protectorates, along with gatekeepers being purchased from Thorn's Cluster for each protectorate to back them up. He paused again, this time looking along the line of my officers, who weren't really mine anymore. Congratulations on your promotions and new duties, Rear Admirals. The crowd exploded into applause again. 2. Of course, they all wanted to talk to me about their new responsibilities. None of them were in my chain of command, except Serena, and she was only because I owned the militia she now ran. But they looked to me because, in spite of all their responsibilities, we were still a squadron, and always would be. So I told them to circulate and get the congratulations they all deserved, and I'd catch up with each of them. We were all on call in case the Kira War demanded our attention again, but until then, everyone was going to make the most of the ceremony adjoining lunch. I started with Jill, after seeing General Smith heading for her after she'd finished with family and squadron hugs. The crowd made a hole around us, giving the illusion of a private talk. Jill was concerned about getting the rescue service responsibility, especially since the Imperator's own original team were an integral part of it. She and Annabelle knew each other, but not well. Over the last year, John had made sure our two teams had socialized together, but it was a case of we were Navy and they were Marines, and it limited things. But all of us had respect for them. In fact, BA had trained us as Marines early on, with help from some of the others. Annabelle reminded Jill she'd had a lot of rescue situations handed to her in small chunks, and had passed the tests well, which was why she'd been considered for this. She had a lot of training ahead of her now, but Annabelle was still going to be there as she started running rescues instead of her. Annabelle herself had taken over the coordination job from John, and now, with the number of militias having their own troops, she needed someone to take over from her. The question of promoting one or both of the Peck twins, now colonels, to brigadier, to run the rescue service had come up, but, like the fleet admirals, they were content as they were. Allison Vogain now had her full bird as well, and all three were running battalions which doubled as Marines and rescue troops, and had done both at the same time in the middle of battles. I left Jill and Annabelle talking, and bumped into Serena next. Of all of them, she was the happiest. Her job had been reduced. Instead of needing to run patrols across a large chunk of Imperium space, she was now only responsible for the Thorns Cluster and Haven space, which had been her original brief. But she was still coming to grips with running an actual militia. I had no doubts she'd be really good at it. Wolf was looking a bit more subdued now, having lost his grin as he worked out just how much extra responsibility he'd gained. The Luffafluffs had more than an army brigade strength now, well on their way to fielding a division, and so he was going to be in charge of brigadiers and colonels, while their navy was not yet big enough for a fleet admiral. But his biggest fear had actually been a colonel being promoted above him to run the formalized militia, so he accepted that at least he was now fully in command, even if he now needed to learn how to manage army units. By the time we finished talking, Annabelle had finished with Jill, spotted him, and was coming over. Matunga was deep in discussion with a group of cats when I walked up to him, but they broke off and gave us space. Of all of them, his responsibilities were now the biggest. He had a large fleet which had been steadily growing, which was mainly attached to Marshal James' carrier force, since the cats had their own carriers and squadrons now. In some ways, he'd been living his dream, like Jill had been, and now reality had stepped in and demanded proper attention from him. But I assured him he was going to be getting some of the more recently obsolete cat ships to cover the Protectorate with. John and I had negotiated that to make sure he had a second tier of ships for the job. He alone wasn't getting any extra Imperium ships. But he was surprised to learn that some of the captains who'd not been able to join the Imperium wanted to work for him, and they'd be joining his Protectorate force. He had a considerable reputation with his own people now, and I doubt he recognized it. He soon would. Fina and Dorm were talking to Willow. They were all the same rank now, although Willow was a general. Fina was responsible for the 5 Dragonkin planets, while Dorm was responsible for the corridor from them to Wonderland and out to near where the Terrans had learnt their hard lesson. That corridor was getting bigger as Leanne explored that area of space, and we changed jump points to protect vulnerable societies. I told her she needed to talk to Squadron Leader Lacey, the Eagle himself, who was something of a legend in the Imperium, having once been the Imperium CAG, about that end of her new responsibility. 266 was out on the arm where we'd found the Giants. Willow had her own planet to run now, and was training some of the more advanced mages among her people for the Dragon Host. That was also my main focus at the moment, at least officially. The three of them were happy with the distribution, especially Willow, who'd wanted none of it. It was Dorm who'd have to cope with traitors bothering the worlds I'd brought back from genocide, who'd mostly agreed to trade, but were still too busy winding down from being in a war mode to consider talking about joining the Imperium. Mel had the smallest task, but also the most difficult. Her space adjoined the Luffafluffs and my own, but unlike the Luffafluffs, Solidario hadn't had any real military forces. They'd relied on mages in the past and managed to annoy the Ralnor before John and Thorn found them. So Mel had been building something from scratch. Like Serena, she was the most senior officer they had, and literally the only choice. Her gatekeepers and her own justice had been part of some key fights, though, so her fledgling militia had been blooded. She was welcoming the current challenge, which also included the formation of Marine units once enough came out of the cadet program. Lauren and Norton were talking with each other when I walked up to them. Both of them were taking over command from older officers who had no experience with modern ships. Both the Democratic Union and Naranja had big fleets of obsolete ships, some of which had been traded to Kelawan a while ago, but very few competent officers. Rear Admiral Jen had been running things there for a long time, until she joined the Imperium and then my militia, before she and her two friends had died in a volcano eruption after retiring. Jen, leaving the DU, had left them with incompetent officers in command, but they'd not been called on for much. Now they were, having bought gatekeepers, which were a battleship-sized, smaller version of the Justice Behemoth, even though usually referred to as heavy cruisers, so as not to unduly alarm people, since they were rapidly becoming the Imperium's standard preferred patrol ship. Naranja had been in a similar situation, and they too ended up buying gatekeepers as well. Lauren and Norton had both been commanding the gatekeepers from their justices, with the obsolete ships still under the command of their older and out-of-date officer corps. Now both of them had been given the full commands, with key 2-star officers being retired to make way for them. It had been a long time coming, but John and I had finally talked their governments into it, given they now finally had officers capable of doing the jobs. They were both understandably stoked about it. But, as I told them now, they'd also be overseeing the formation of army units, which surprised them. Both their societies had some, but they'd never fought a war, and were so badly trained that Vonda Wellington had not accepted anyone who'd applied to the Imperium from them. Now they'd both be in charge of training up what was there, or building something new, starting with those who came out of the Imperium Cadet program. A lot of what John and I had accomplished in organizing all this over the last couple of weeks had been possible in the wake of the
Sample complete. Ready to continue?